Welcome to Birds of a Feather. This is your girl AJ, Suburban Princess, with a brief observation podcast because we all know what's coming. Anybody who has been an Eagles fan long enough has known that these seasons that slowly start creeping in towards the almost end of a very confusing, restless, undisciplined season means that there's probably more of this to come until there's a major changing of the guard, I should say, especially in the front office. The Philadelphia Eagles right now are in a very tight situation, and money is always seeming to be the root of a lot of ills that go on in the front office. No, I'm not a wizard. No, I'm not a pro. No, I'm not a capologist like supposedly Howie Roseman was or is. I don't remember every single draft pick since he's been in charge, and I don't remember what happened during that year that the dream team with Mike Vick and Vince Young as a backup, and apparently there's an article out there that I need to read that involved Lou Riddick being in the front office at that time. I don't know in what total position, but apparently it's something I have to research to find out why he's most likely not going to come back in the front office position anymore with the Eagles, which is probably why now that he is on the commentator panel during Monday Night Football at ESPN, he's probably never going to come back, especially during a beatdown, and not necessarily even a beatdown because this game was literally only lost by how many points? Six or seven? It was a 23-17 loss, and that last touchdown that the Eagles got was garbage time, literally, like less than a minute left in the fourth quarter, and Carson threw a Hail Mary, and Richard Rodgers, our seemingly acrobatic, taller target for Carson amongst many missed targets during this game, that caught that Hail Mary in the end zone. And then successfully, Miles Sanders ran in the two-point conversion where it seemed like they should have probably used it earlier, and where whatever the blocking system that changed in that last literal 30, 20 seconds of the game, whatever it was, nothing seemed to help throughout the whole game. Now, mind you, this is the third time the Seahawks and the Eagles have met at home, and it looked like at one point during the game on Monday night that the Eagles might lose by the same score. It's 17-9. I didn't realize the relevance until I saw Twitter timeline blow up and say, holy crap, we're going to lose to the same score that they beat us during the playoffs last year and during the regular season year. Now, once Seahawks scored again, that took care of that. But here's the thing. The defense really impressed only to create a lot of three and outs for the Seahawks. I don't know why the Seahawks coaching staff and Pete Carroll were so freaking conservative. I thought they would probably run DK Metcalf up our necks. I didn't even expect them to run Chris Carson or anybody that much. I thought it was just going to be DK versus the whole Eagles team. And Carson didn't seem to be very present for most of the game, but it seems like there was a moment where he finally said, F it, I'm just going to start running. And that whole drive became wasted once Carson threw a pick in the end zone. Either he threw over Dallas before he did that interception, or he just either blew an opportunity to run the ball or find somebody to get the first down first before fatally deciding to throw in the end zone again. I don't remember exactly the sequence. All I know is that he's showing more signs of frustration than he has in 2018 year, even before he had to sit again because of the back issue that seemed to spring up beginning of the season and forced Nick to have to play the rest of that season into the postseason again. Well, what we're not going to do is bring up Nick Foles, because that's the least of our problems and that's the least of our hopes, because Nick himself is now injured from his last play in Chicago from a very awkward fall trying to buy time to throw the ball, and he landed awkwardly on his side, which kind of, I guess, crunched part of his hip. And from what I'm hearing, they already had started Mitchell Trubisky, and more of the same. You know, he's basically not a very impressive quarterback either. Chicago has a problem now, but going back to the original point of this podcast, what we're not going to do is discuss the fact that 2017-2018 is relevant anymore. We are now in the last month of 2020. Thank you, Jesus. This has been the year from hell. This has been the year of exposing a lot of willful ignorance. COVID obviously was the main deceptor, causing a pandemic and a quarantine that lasted forever and still is lasting forever for most, because those who did decide to abide by the rules with a mask and limiting how much exposure they were outside, you've been in quarantine for like 10 months. So it just seems like no matter how much we get closer to possibly getting a cure or a remedy for this pandemic, it seems like there's a lot more factors that hold us in limbo, at least till 2021, maybe even before February, maybe even before March, before we even really find a legitimate cure or vaccine that's actually going to do the job without too many side effects that could possibly put people in worse position than they were before they started. Needless to say, 2020 hasn't been ideal, and as many times as I've talked about this on past episodes, the podcast knows no bounds when it comes to venting and complaining about our favorite things, our favorite teams. But what I'm not going to do is focus on the past anymore. Yes, I have had many a Twitter squabble with other fans about how Carson sucks as a whole. He never was good, this, that, and that third. And I'm just over that argument as well. He may not be perfect. He may not last longer than another year or so, but it may just be enough. You know, I don't see the point of trading him, but if they did trade him, it would make sense for him to go to Indianapolis, where Frank Reich is, if he is the only guy that can really get to him. Somewhere along the line, shortly after they decided to sign Carson, instead of letting him run out his rookie contract and see how he healed back from the last injury, you have to keep in consideration the man was upright all of 2019. And up until that concussion that literally stopped the whole flow of the Seahawk game in the playoffs last year, but it was Carson's first playoff game, there's always a bit of wind that comes out of the sails when it comes to Carson. You always want to root for him because he as an individual is a very stand-up person. But we're not talking about that. As fans, we have to look at what he puts out on the field, and it's not very conducive to the argument that he deserves a starting role in this team, on this team anymore. But where I'm not going to go is he was never good. You know, what I will say is that I'm not going to bring up the Super Bowl anymore because he didn't finish it and he didn't get to play in it. But what I will say is that every year from his rookie year, when he was kind of thrown into that position last minute because of another injury that forced him to start earlier, he has done nothing but show grit, hunger, passion, and a little bit of a hero complex at times that probably put him in dire situations that he will never probably be able to shake from his career reputation. But he's definitely someone you cannot ever accuse of not having heart. Yes, he makes a lot of bad decisions. Yes, he makes the same bad decisions. But I'm personally a perfect example of someone who constantly can get stuck in ruts at times, and it takes a little bit more deprogramming and soul searching for me to finally understand why, you know, repeating the same mistake is not helpful. Now, my whole argument has always been, and will continue to be as long as Carson Wentz is on this team, is that he needs somebody who is firm about his isms and his mistakes to the point where they get his technique straight. Because if there's one thing that most of the veteran and older commentators will always go back to is the fact that they've never liked his technique. They've never liked his feet position. They've never liked how he doesn't go through his progressions. But where all that goes out the window as a fan is you notice he doesn't have any time. That's why him rolling out of the pocket and him running is the only thing that's going to get him further than a first down, because none of these plays worked at all and nobody seemed to want to catch the ball or be in the right position as Carson. So I don't know if maybe between the announcement or the rumor that Lori wanted, you know, Hurts to stay if Carson was struggling, to actual game time, did Carson just kind of decide, well, whatever? Because I don't think anybody was on the same page with him for about maybe a quarter and a half. And unfortunately, that has been the theme of every game this year. Them having to scramble their way back into it in the fourth quarter, or have a totally sucky first half and then come back and light it on fire. But it definitely, the theme of this year was damned if you do, damned if you don't. Because between the injuries and between these freakish experiments of roster switching and COVID list here and, you know, roster moving because they were allowed to keep so many people on that list for longer than prior seasons. And now, what really made me want to even record tonight, because at first I wasn't going to even record, knowing that Will Parks, who was enthusiastic about coming home as a safety and prove himself, and now seeing today him tweet out that, you know, it's been real, I did all I could, all love, it just made me sad, because it made me realize that he probably was the only person who probably knew what he needed to do. And once again, we're looking back at the coaching, Howie Roseman, Jeffrey Lurie, all the people who don't seem to know exactly why these changes keep happening. From what I know, even if Will was badly injured in the brief trainings camp that they had before they rushed the season to start, do we know if maybe that was the reason why some of these coaches decided to not give him as much playing time? The rumors are that supposedly he left because he really didn't feel like he got enough playing time, which is totally true, because the few times that he would be in there and make a good sack, he was always in the front. The few times I even saw his name called during the game that wasn't on special teams, he was the first person up front that got that sack or got up front and stopped the quarterback. So I don't know why you would release someone who, the few times that they had a shot on the field, they literally fought for it. Just don't understand that. Then, whatever the project or issue between Penn State rookie Sharif Miller, from when they brought him on here last year and didn't use him, and then this year he never even saw the field, and now his release is damning to me too. And knowing now that Jason Peters came back, took Mailata's place at left tackle, and then proceeded to suck most of the games he played, as I thought he would, because he's old and he's obviously got bad injury and now he apparently has turf toe, but tried to fight through it. And yes, if you switch Mailata back to a position that he wasn't really training to be doing, and then expect him to play great, and most of the blow-ups that happened on Carson's side was on his side, it's just embarrassing. And then this team has to go to Green Bay. This team has to go play Aaron Rodgers, who is smelling himself in the worst way. And he's got ballers. Like, I don't know who's going to defend fine-ass Robert Tonyan, who's on a streak now, homeboy. Okay, and he's fine. But I don't expect any of the corners to stop him if he's on a roll. And he's taller than probably most of the guys that are, you know, Avante and all the guys that are out there. Jalen Mills, all those guys. Besides Slay, I don't think anybody can stop him if he gets a good path to the end zone. He didn't seem to be slowed down by any team thus far. That's why his name is suddenly out there, because he's become one of Aaron Rodgers' favorite targets besides Davante Adams. There's no way in hell this team is going to win in Green Bay. The same team that played that great game last season, shockingly, when everybody was mad that some of the players like Deshaun and Alshon were a week after suddenly having these injuries that weren't going to go away and they weren't going to be starting, Carson and them pulled that game out of their butts, and it became a very, very good Thursday night game. And I was very shocked by the result, and I was very happy with it too, because it was actually not as nerve-wracking to watch. They were definitely making do with what they had. You know, Matt Collins got a good play in there. I think he was in that game. I could be thinking of the Falcons game. Never mind, because I think they lost that game. But the Green Bay game coming this weekend is going to be a total shit show. This is not this team that literally put people in place and managed to make it work last year. This is a team that has lost trust and faith again. The quarterback is starting to doubt everything he does. And you don't even know if the coach even gives a shit either. Because to me, Doug looked lethargic and, I don't know, annoyed. And he seemed even apparently bitchier from his press conference today. So I don't feel like even Doug is aware that his play calling is sucky. And the fact that he gets insulted now when people suggest him giving the duties away, it just shows you why they never decided to get an OC this year. And after the draft, with the questionable pick of Jalen Hurts, knowing that he seems to be hurting more than helping, unless they just decide to start him. But why would you start him in Green Bay, of all places? I'd rather he start during a weaker opponent, you know? I'd rather start him maybe when they see the Washington team again, or even, hell, the Cowboys, because maybe the Cowboys can take him off our hands and give us CeeDee Lamb. But I know that's not going to happen. I'm just saying. It's gotten to a point now where you know that there's just a simple issue of somebody deciding to humble themselves and step down from something and let somebody else inject some new energy. Somewhere along the line, there's a big pride issue with the coach and the quarterback, and apparently now the owner, who decided he thought his opinion would matter and Jalen Hurts getting more time. Yes, they did inject him in the game, but he also injected him again in the same places where it doesn't make sense. If you're going to let him play a whole series. Don't inject him after Carson already threw three worthless passes that didn't do anything, and then expect him to be on the same page as Carson when it comes to calling, you know, the cadence or whatever they call it at center. And everybody false started. So it just shows you that you can't put Jalen in the middle of a series. You either start him on a series or let him sit on the sidelines. I don't see the point. Or if you want to make him a wide receiver, make him a wide receiver instead of a running back. You know, I'd rather just have Jalen Reagor put in there. If you don't have faith in the running game, put Jalen Reagor in. Because that one time they did a pseudo screen, I think somebody called it a tumble screen, it worked, you know. And Jalen's obviously not getting put in positions as a wide receiver. So he might as well just be a mock running back whenever Miles can't get a clean break. I mean, if you want to throw Jalen in there too, then you might as well just make him be what the others aren't at that moment, since he's obviously not allowed to be a wide receiver now. Quit the bullshit with Alshon. If Shante hears this podcast, she knows that we predicted if Alshon was coming back that he would take the reps away from Travis. Well, he did and he didn't. You know, they put him in the same time with Travis, but then Travis wasn't getting separation, so he was never getting the ball. He did eventually get some catches, but some of them were overthrown. Some of them didn't get a first down. Like, they weren't even catches that made Travis what he was so early in the season. So, once again, we go back to the same issue, which is the coaching, the front office, and the GM. All of these issues, not being able to trade Carson is going to be the obvious resolution, because you just signed him not too long ago. And if you weren't so sure that you believed he was going to make it, then you probably shouldn't have signed him. You probably should have waited for that extra year just to make sure, in case you weren't ready to commit, you know? There was very much reason for people to believe that he wasn't worthy of getting signed right away, knowing his injury history. But he was also the reason why the Eagles even got close to a championship in the first place. Whether or not he finished it, to me, is beyond the point. I think the point is he actually got them to that record where Nick could at least finish off one or two that needed to matter and then move on to the big game. There are just so many cap hits that are coming. You know that Jason Kelce's probably done because he's been, unfortunately, an unreliable liability as a center now because he's clearly injured. I think it started happening the beginning of this year and the beginning of last year, where he either had a groin injury or he had a back injury, or I think this year it's been the elbow now again. I don't know if it's the same elbow, but Kelce's been having issues, you know, hiking the ball. If he's not overthrowing Carson, trying to make sure he can hurry up and get the rush, he's been causing false starts. And a lot of people say it's mostly because of the line issues again, like not knowing where the guys are going to move. So his mind is another place, but as soon as he snaps the ball, and sometimes he's missing Carson totally. Now, I would just have Carson under center then, you know, to eliminate that, but I don't, you know, that could be wrong. But my point is, what we're not going to do is focus on the past, because this whole season has pretty much become the past without it even finishing. You know, presently we have a team that still slightly has a chance to win this division, but I'm sorry, Washington is starting to look good, which I kind of feared as soon as we lost that first game. The Giants are starting to get, you know, in a rhythm, even though Daniel apparently pulled his hammy last week, so he may or may not play the next game, but doesn't matter because the whole division sucks, and we know this. This has been reiterated thousands of times. It's being a pundit now, you know, it's been a joke all over, you know, the national shows and, you know, the panel shows. But the reality is somebody has to win something. And for the Eagles not to even be a contender because of their own stupid mistakes and miscues that have cost every single game, then you don't deserve to win. I just refuse to believe that Carson would just go to shit because he's a horrible quarterback. I think he's a good quarterback. He has the potential to be great, but the problem is, timing-wise, he hasn't been able to really get a full shake because if not injury, you know, he just didn't have a team. He didn't have a squad. But again, how many times have we said that about Donovan? You know, I mean, Donovan had injuries too, but he played through them. He was a different body. He was thicker than Carson, so I don't know if that even matters. But the point is, I feel like we put these, you know, excuses out as fans because we don't want, you know, Carson to... You don't want to hurt Carson's feelings, but we don't see him. You know, to us, he's just a guy that's not producing consistently. So therefore, we've decided he's not going to be the future. You know, I think we all thought that Super Bowl year that after not expecting a Super Bowl that year, that Carson was definitely going to be at least another 10-year quarterback. Well, you know, almost, just not going to be 10 years directly with us. I think the sad part is I think a lot of stuff that he doesn't know is showing, and I think it's also a lot of stuff that maybe the prior coaching staff had let go of or disregarded as liabilities to his game are now starting to creep up, like the lack of pocket presence, the fact that he doesn't seem to know when someone's wide open because he's so busy trying to focus on one person in particular. It's like his brain can't switch at the last minute. But yet it does at times, so that's what's freaky about it. It's like, but sometimes he does these crazy last-minute throws, and they work. So what's frustrating is that you can't get that same consistency in every game, and you definitely damn sure can't get it in the start of a great game. You know, they can have a flawless series and then blow it in the end zone. Or, you know, all we need is 3 points, and, you know, freaking Elliott misses it, you know? Or it could just be a simple read or a pass play that just goes awry, or Carson throws a pick. You know, they, like I said, this whole season is summed up to me, damned if you do, damned if you don't. And that's out of their control, which means to me, they just have to, like the pandemic, wait it out, you know? And everything this year has required huge amounts of patience. And obviously, as a fan base, we have none. We're sick and tired of not being able to bask in a glory of a championship and then have it repeated within a year or two later. You know, the Super Bowl hangover definitely is real, but they had so much potential to be able to at least come from behind and at least get back into the playoffs last year, and they blew it. You know, the gambles that Howie had taken to sign some of the free agents he did that ended up working out for us for the Super Bowl, I think he pompously thought he could repeat that formula again for these last two seasons, and it hasn't worked. It's blown up in his face, and there were some people that he thought for sure were a sure thing way before they were, Alshon. And as much as I liked Alshon, I think that the reality is, no matter how much weight he has lost and how lean he's got, he's never been a fast runner, but he just always seemed to be at the right place at the right time, regardless of all the rumors that broke out after that sucky year. I think that him and Carson had a good chemistry for the most part. And regardless of whatever happened behind the scenes that we don't really officially know, it wasn't that serious, because I felt like they had suddenly a lot of communication on the field Monday night. But by then it didn't matter, because we knew Carson was really not feeling, you know, the normal swag that he had when he was on point. And it's so long ago since we last saw Carson be totally in control that you almost feel like it was a figment of your imagination. And that's sad. But again, that's where the trolls can get off labeling him as a bust. And I just refuse. I just refuse to give in to the totality thinking that he has never been a good quarterback and never had the potential to be one. I don't care what school he came from. That kid shows traces every now and then. That's what made every single loss a maddening experience, because every game they had a shot to come back and win. Every game they had a shot to complete a couple of series in a row. And if it wasn't a stupid two-point conversion that didn't work, it would be a missed field goal, or it'd be an interception, or a miscue and misfire. So, yes, every team goes through this, but sometimes you just don't go through it at the same times every time. And now it's to the point where it seems like they don't even know how to do the simple things. You've gotten so out of sync that you don't even have the fundamentals down. And you can't do anything about that after a while. The brain just has to almost like decide to either tune out or reset itself. And I really do think this team needs a reset. And it's a shame, because they already had their bye week, but you would have thought they would have came back hungrier and stronger than ever, and they couldn't have looked even more worthless. And I'm still mad about whatever decisions they're deciding with personnel, because nothing has really been making any sense as to who is deciding to keep who and who is letting who walk and who is deciding that some should come back even though they're busted. It's just ridiculous, you know. And to see Carson being upright and being completely healthy for the most part in a couple years, it's like, it's a shame to waste what could have been a better year, regardless of how it started, and to watch it fizzle and burn every game. Now, every game you're expecting now for them to come out and like look great, but that was supposed to happen last night. That was supposed to happen, you know, after the bye. And it's like, nothing. It's just, I don't know if Carson's just refusing to really take over totally, or if Doug is refusing to admit that he doesn't want this quarterback to start anymore, and he's just forcing plays, or he's just trying to act like he knows that he can handle it, but he doesn't really think he can. I mean, if you want Jalen Hurts, you're gonna get what you paid for. And that kid is not ready, because the simple things that they are trying to give to him are not working. And some of the guys that haven't even been on the team long enough, because they've been either coming back from injury or haven't even been in long enough, that chemistry is just not going to come out of nowhere, because it's not Carson. But what we're not going to do is predict next season. You just hope that whatever they can suffice, and the cap hits that probably eventually will come regardless, because good old Howard chose to re-sign some of the people he did and then let go of others. You just hope that maybe this squad will have a different look regardless next year that will actually look interesting. So all I just hope at this point is that we don't have to suffer too much longer. You know, I don't think they purposely tank seasons in the NFL, but I do believe that there's a point where you can see that they don't want to win, they don't care anymore, so it's whatever. Clearly, that's what's happening. And the lethargic feel. The bottom line is there's a season to finish, and as a fan, it's very hard to want to watch it. But as a loyal fan, you're going to, because that's just what you do. You don't have high expectations anymore. You don't feel the need to guess predictions of scores because you can't read your team anymore, and you don't have a feel for what may or may not happen and what you hope to happen, because you know that probably nothing will. Usually the sign that when fans usually give up, that's when the team decides to tune back in, when it doesn't matter. I remember one of the phrases that Coach Peterson had said one time was that the pressure was off. And when he said that, it made a lot of people livid, because it was like, wait, what? And when he said that, it kind of made everybody say, oh, so I guess that means you're not going to try to win anymore. You know, it's not even like halfway through the season. I think he was more inferring to the fact that, you know, we're already in this hole, so there's no, you know, there's not going to be any perfect record. There's not going to be the players that I envision to be fighting out with us are not here due to injury. So, you know, there's no heavy expectation for us to finish, you know, 11-5 or 12-4, like, you know, every season hopeful predictions usually state. And I think that, actually, no, take that back. That wasn't the beginning of the season. That was like mid-season, because at that point they had already lost like so many in a row. And that's when they ended up kind of, I think there was a bye. And then I think that's when the four games in a row, divisional games, they won. I think one of those games by the skin of their teeth. I think it was the Dallas game. But either way, the point is they came back. And I think it's very easy to fall into Negadelphia every game, because you already see the signs of a team that's not on the same page, which you're like thinking, why aren't you on the same page when you've all been playing together or should have been practicing? What are you practicing? You know, Doug kind of throwing out there this year, you know, that Carson has some lazy practicing habits or whatever. You know, Carson didn't want to fight back, because that's just not his nature to just kind of throw a petty barb out there and just say, well, if I'm lazy. But I think that he knows that there are times he probably slacks, and he probably maybe loses motivation, because you don't know who your squad is and your squad keeps changing. And hell, I mean, once Zach Ertz, to me, kind of got sassy, and I'm sure it'll never be confirmed what was happening, but him and Howard going at it, Howie Roseman, going at it on the field, which is something he never does or hasn't done, at least in public. So with that and the draft, I don't know if maybe even Zach had kind of a heads up, like, is this really worth it for me? And the fact that he probably didn't win, you know, up in his contract argument, he probably really was like, you know what? I'm a head out. You know, like, maybe he was just like, next year's my last year. Whatever happens, happens. I'm just here to catch balls and go home. Like, I mean, there's nothing worse than a coworker or a employee who decides to just phone it in. And I think that's where we are right now in this season of Eagles, is just the phone in, you know? I don't think that anybody means to be tuning out, but it's kind of instinctual, especially when you know that this organization has been dead-ass stubborn about changing things at the drop of a dime. And I think even the Chip Kelly firing was shocking to people, because they only had a few games left anyway, so they thought, just ride it out with him. I guess something must have finally clicked and said, well, if I hear another bad story about how this guy is like being very evasive with people, you know, and staff and everything, then it's creating a bad vibe. But Lori has a way of tuning in at the weirdest times. And I think even though he knows this is a heavier burden now, because he went from keeping Howie out of the spotlight for a while and then getting burnt by his own his own move with Chip Kelly, to now have to realize you brought Howie back, then you win a Super Bowl, so suddenly he's back in the running. And now we're going to reaping the, I wouldn't say benefits, but reaping a karma on this team that seems to hang over since the Super Bowl, that we will never be able to see another Super Bowl for at least another 5 years. And that is depressing and scary, but when you have to rebuild, usually that means a lot of the familiar faces will be gone in a year, and it'll be a new team. And with a new team is new energy, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be easy to digest, because you know new teams means they're not probably going to get too far right away, you know. Mind you, they've had a lot of roster changes, but it was never a completely new team. Well, technically, yes, it was. Let me take that back. But there were still some remnants of, you know, 2017, you know, when Nick was here for that last year. And then, you know, most of the guys that were signed when Chip Kelly came, like Zach, you know, brought a lot of nostalgia. But yet you have new faces like Dallas Goedert, who became Ertz's complement. And I never thought that Dallas would replace Ertz, but I also never thought Ertz would even contemplate leaving or being traded, due to the fact that, you know, the talks of him getting a new contract were falling through or not going well. And yet constantly, little by little, Howie has put himself in a corner, because you're re-signing people who don't have any business being on the field, and yet you don't want to sign your tight end because you are literally tied with your hands behind your back in cap money. So once again, you wonder why some of the points that even Mike Missanelli was making on his show today about how you shouldn't have people in charge who have no instinct about how to put a football roster together, and then not knowing how to deal with leftover funds that you can't spend to create new faces, new energy, and you know, new energy in general, just because I think that having new faces only makes sense as long as the person is serving a need and not just the energy itself. Like, there has to be a reason why you'd bring somebody who is fast, not just because they're wide receiver, but they're also fast in innovatively thinking ways to work out of a play or work out of a bind. And sometimes just being fast is not enough. I mean, they supposedly got all these, you know, unrestricted free agents, and then you got some guys from the draft in the last couple rounds, but did they really see the field this year? No. And some of them got hurt early, so they weren't able to really play until now. And even Davion Taylor, I'd forgotten they had got him as a, I think he was a safety, or he ended up being on special teams, but he made an amazing, you know, tackle, but he's shown more than once, and who even heard his name since he was reportedly drafted? So, and then you release Will, who they just got from the Denver Broncos, and you're wondering, okay, but you have Avante out there, and Cravon LeBlanc, Strap, who's been hurt, and poor Avante's out there on an island, so now he's like the new Jalen. Jalen is being Jalen, you know, ineffective, but yet very proud of himself. And then, you know, you have the two linebackers who are shining the most, TJ Edwards and Alex Singleton, who really need to be, you know, multiplied so that we have several of them inside and outside, so that, you know, there's some good coverage in the middle of the field. But yes, do we need more linebackers? Yes. But when have the Eagles ever made linebacker a priority? And I'm praying that TJ and Alex will be the lights that will maybe make the next draft, you know, linebacker full, you know, at least to make up for the fact that they can't ever find good safeties or corners. And Slay, I'm not worried about Slay, because Slay is a pro. I don't know why, you know, you had the haters on Twitter last night talking about he didn't do his job, and him himself saying it, but I also think Slay cares enough that he can take accountability for letting a touchdown in. But part of me goes, well, I must have a very low bar, because he always catches up to every person that he's in charge of. And he got in front of a lot of players this year that reduced their ability to get catches. So I think he's done his job more than any other guy has done. So that alone to me is a win. I don't care what happened last night with Slay. I don't have a problem with him. I think the critics are the ones who, I don't know, they just expect them all to be Superman sometimes. And I just want to say that is not freaking realistic. So please stop. Please stop expecting these players to come out and just be crisp every damn game. It's not going to happen. Professional or not, they're allowed for their bodies to give out. They're allowed for them to sometimes whiff on a play. You know, it's going to happen. Your instincts don't always win, you know? And that's the problem with Jalen Mills. It's always been his instincts were always, he either over-pursues or gets burnt. Period. And, you know, any other time that he has gotten somebody, it hasn't been as much as the times that he's missed. So that's mostly what we fans remember. But I won't say that he hasn't done anything, but I know that Super Bowl year, everybody seemed to be on their P's and Q's. And I don't know if it was because of the coaching or what, but Jim Schwartz was still there during the Super Bowl year. So go figure. I don't know why he's exposed himself a lot more since then in concepts. And I don't know why the players don't seem to really have any kind of control of the field at certain games, unless you're just, the competition is more trained, should I say, more well-trained than our players this year. And I don't know if maybe even the COVID situation even bothered the Eagles as much as it seems to have affected and infiltrated other teams, but those other teams are still at least winning games handily. You know, the Steelers are still undefeated, and now they have to play this totally out of whack game tomorrow afternoon with the Ravens because both teams got hit with the COVID, and even my quarterback that I love, Lamar, is probably going to be recovering. I don't know if he's definitely playing tomorrow, but if he doesn't play tomorrow, that means that's definitely going to be a loss for them. And it's a shame because they didn't play that well against the Steelers in their first game. So it would suck if Lamar couldn't even finish to even try to give them a one out of one chance. Now, if they end up seeing each other in the playoffs, that's different. But with the way it's going with some of these teams, you know, COVID seems to still not really be a factor until they get it. And that's kind of not cool, you know? I didn't appreciate any of the players, even Chase Claypool, tweeting that they were mad about, you know, losing, I guess, extra relaxed time or recovery time because they kept rescheduling the game. Knowing that these games have been rescheduled for some of these teams, you know, having rampant outbreaks, you should be more concerned of whether or not you're healthy and not criticize another team because you can't play a certain time. If you wanted to opt out because this was going to be a risk, you should have opted out. So I definitely was not for hearing or seeing the tweets from some of these players getting mad because they couldn't play when they could because now they're going to lose their extra week or whatever, how it works. But the point is, if some of these players die, then what are you going to feel like? I mean, James Conner now is a candidate. And I don't think he was even really harping as much as he just said, I missed the game. That was about it. Everybody else was the one who was out there trying to blame the Ravens, trying to make it sound like they were trying to get an advantage by postponing the game. And in my head, I want to be like, you don't know how hard it's hit them. And they still don't understand why it wasn't contained. So now it's an issue of who was on the staff that wasn't really trying to do any regulations. And it just goes back to the original point of, was it worth for this whole season to even happen if players weren't going to be so nonchalant and team players or staff members weren't going to take it seriously? So again, there's a mental lull, and then there's the whole issue of, are you more mad because you don't have extra recovery time, or are you just less concerned about who got sick and just want to play a game? Because either way, they're both kind of selfish, you know? And hopefully James Conner, who got it, and he's a past survivor of cancer, hopefully he won't have any kind of symptoms that'll plague him for a long time, because he can't afford it. His immune system has already obviously been compromised. So the players on the Steelers team better shut their traps and delete their tweets now so they can stop putting themselves in a karmic situation. I mean, Chase especially, because he's a very gifted wide receiver that I still wish the Eagles had selected, but he can't, as a rookie, be piping up like that. And I'm sure the coach has probably made it known that it's getting attention and it's not a good look. Yes, they're all inconvenienced time frame wise, but I mean, let's be real. The Super Bowl might be in freaking February. I mean, might be in March at this point, the way it looks like. Because there might be several more teams that might have to it might affect the whole season now. You know, no one wants a game on a Wednesday, you know, especially if you were slated to have play like right again that Sunday. You have less time to recover, practice, and fly down and get your rest in between. So, yeah, well, that was the risk that the NFL had to take. You know, once the outbreak and the second wave came through, which is now in effect because we're in December now, you can't really expect the rules to not apply to you. You got to be a team player in every sense. And to me, you get paid too much money, even as a rookie, to be bitching and moaning about losing an extra recovery day. You're a professional football player. Stop the Twitter fingers and just, you know, seethe in your own little puddle somewhere away from social media. Nobody wants to hear it when they really can't afford anything right now as much as you can. So, I digress again, but my point is, overall, the NFL has been a very frustrating, interesting, complicated season. And now that the NBA is coming back around again, because they really had a short turnaround due to the delay of their season, it'll be more interesting to talk about the Sixers in the next week or so than it will be the Eagles. But usually when these teams start crossing, you find you have less anger towards the Eagles because you're not focused on them as much when the Sixers come to distract. Especially now they got so many new things going on with the coach, you know, with preseason. You get to see if the strategies that maybe he's infiltrating will actually register with these players. You get to see if Ben has done any kind of growing, you know, I guess mental in his game wise, because physically he's obviously getting thicker, very attractive as he gets older. But, you know, at this point, I feel like he knows he's attractive. I just want him to not lose any confidence, or if he does shoot, fine. Obviously, this coach is not going to stress it last minute like Brett Brown did, but I think he said he's just going to let him do what he wants. And if he wants to, that's just basically a door for Ben to say, all right, no pressure. So if I do feel like shooting, I'll shoot. If not, I don't think anybody should care, because we're supposed to have shooters around us, Tobias specifically. So, and as long as Mike is still on this team, I would rather him just come in as an anchor like he does and just seal the deal, so that when the starters get tired, he can come in and just, you know, seal the deal for him. That's going to be his name. He's going to be the cleaner. And I hope that whoever else is on the bench with him, even if it is Firkman, you know, will help Mike even get more rest time when he gets probably a little winded. If he does, I don't know. I don't know how he physically has been taking care of himself thus far, because he hasn't really been on social media as much. But I have seen an acknowledgement of my tweets a lot more. So thank you. Shout out to Mike. But either way, I'm welcoming the Sixers to this next chapter, because we Eagle fans is tired. We tired of seeing a bullshit product, and we're damn sure tired of being depressed every game now that we know that we don't think we're going to go far or win this division. And I had my ifs about this division from like maybe 2 or 3 weeks before, maybe 2 weeks before the bye. I think I had this weird sinking feeling that they'll be lucky if they even slide into the playoffs. But on another note, I just want to stress it's very important that we as fans not take it too seriously to the point where we're adding players negative things. I would rather add a player encouragement, or just add them, you know, that can't wait for you to come back or something. You know, adding stuff that gets personal with Carson regarding his marriage, regarding his beliefs, regarding his charities, is just foul. This is not the season to be dumping on people, and you really shouldn't do it in general, but I understand Twitter makes people feel like they can say things to someone they never will meet, But you have to realize he is still a human being. Regardless of what's going on around him, his faith will never break. He's clearly been consistent in that. So I don't think any person is worthy of that much criticism. If anything, I've probably tried to nicely tell players, like, please don't vent on social media, because as fans, we've been through the worst. And you don't understand, as a person who hasn't been on the team long enough, to try to come at the fans for being upset about losses. You know, whether you know more than we do behind the scenes is irrelevant. We just know what we saw. And if you lost repeatedly, we're not trying to hear any, you know, fans stay over there crap, because that's just something that just shouldn't be said. In a tweet, at least. I'd rather you just kind of disband yourself from social media, vent it out another way, and then come back. You know, players have to stop with the Twitter fingers all the time, because you make more money than us. Well, some of us. So I don't feel like you need to pop up every time you're frustrated, because you want the fans to support you when you're not producing wins. It's not going to happen. Not here in Philly. This is why you should be happy to be here, because we appreciate you for real. We don't fake anything. And that, to me, should be the reason why you tweet. Appreciation or showing frustration at yourself, maybe, for not helping out with the win or the loss. And that's it. I mean, honestly, other than that, if you want to promote your projects and like LaShawn is always, you know, promoting his artists and promoting his label and his EP. Do that. You know, LaShawn's had more time than anybody, unfortunately, due to his last minute injuries. So what else is he going to do? You know, love on his kids, love on his girlfriend, and just love that he has a COVID-free life right now, you know, and hopefully making amends toward, you know, the people in the Jewish faith who were offended by his post earlier in the summer, you know. So he has things he has to work out outside of football, and he kind of has no choice now because his body has to recover, and most likely he won't be back, and I feel bad for that. But you just can't win a Super Bowl when your team's mentality and play calling is a liability. So once your team tunes out, it's very slim chance you're going to win a chip anytime soon. So on that note, we fans just got to be careful how we use that at button, myself included. I would rather use the at button to show my undying love to somebody or shout out a compliment. But if I got to criticize, I'd rather do it in such a way that it's, you know, I love you, but I wish you had worked a little harder, but I get it. Or please don't tweet at us not understanding why we're mad. You know, there's just a way you can do it without, you know, being the victim of a block or, you know, a player popping off or, you know, indiscreetly muting your tweets. So it's just not worth it in the end, because we really don't know who they are. We just know what they do on the field. So just keep in mind, and if you decided to listen to part two of this, since I was cut off from the first thought, thank you. And if not, don't worry. There are plenty of podcasts out there to listen to. But this is my take. So thank you for listening to Birds of a Feather. I'm sure we all feel the same way. And tomorrow's a new day. It's December. It's December 2nd officially today. And yeah, enjoy life every day. Be safe. Don't take every breath literally for granted these days, because life is definitely short in a pandemic. God bless. Take care. AJ the Suburban Princess. I'm out.